When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable, in which we're going to discuss what's been happening over the opening weekend. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us at the show by emailing us at championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
I'm Ollie Fisher, a Huddersfield Town fan. My Twitter is @OllieFisher, and I currently don't write about Huddersfield Town for a website, but I've got my own website called Sempre Milan, where I write about AC Milan.
My name's James Evans, but it's Jim E. Evans on Twitter. For some reason, I'm the shoot football blogger for QPR. And for my real job, I work on the TV quizlet for those of you that like quizzes.
Hello, my name's Louis Shackshaft. My Twitter handle is just my name, so @LouisShackshaft. I also, like James, I write for shoot. I represent Sheffield Wednesday. I am their blogger, and I also have done recent work for Transfer Bible and the Sheffield Star.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We'll start with making the rounds, where each of us will have a few minutes to discuss what's been going on over the last week, starting with our opening game and then if anything else as well. So we'll start with you, Ollie. A tight home win over Brentford. So we start the season with 3 points. From what I heard, it could have been a lot more, and I think Huddersfield had the better of the game. So what are your thoughts on the game and sort of the summer as a whole?
Yeah, I think obviously as a club we're in a massive transitional period. We've made, I think it's 11 summer signings, in what is David Wagner's first full summer, and he's done a good job of overhauling the squad. He's brought in good bits of quality, and we've seen some of that come together through pre-season. I think the two main pre-season games that we had were against Bundesliga teams in Werder Bremen and Ingolstadt, and we didn't concede against either of those, so it shows that we've improved the defence, which is something that we really needed to do. And the first game against Brentford in a way was a remarkable bit of symmetry, because we played them last game of last season at home and got absolutely played off the park by them and lost 5-1. And I think that, in a way, the last two games of last season for us were a blessing in disguise. We lost 4-0 at Bristol City the game before that as well, because it showed that although the playing style it became better to watch and we were playing fluently, we still weren't tight enough at the back, and we've addressed that this summer. And we saw that on Saturday with what was one of the best opening game performances that I can remember from us in recent times. We're renowned for bottling opening day big time, but we were pretty good yesterday. We were bright in the first half. Brentford didn't seem to have an answer to our pressing game. I saw a Brentford fan say on Twitter that we looked about 3 weeks ahead of them in terms of fitness, which I think we have to be to play the style that we want to. And ultimately we wore them down over the course of 90 minutes. And even when they got back into the game with the equaliser, we showed the composure to just go up the other end and make sure that we got the 3 points that we deserved. And it was two loan signings that got the goals. First of all, it was Kachunga, who actually came from Ingolstadt, who we played in pre-season. And then Casey Palmer, who is obviously very highly rated in the Chelsea setup. For a 19-year-old, for him to come on and score with his second touch was a moment that he'll probably never forget. But the most important thing, I guess, is to start off the season with 3 points. So that's what we did. And, yeah, hopefully we can go under the radar a little bit this season and surprise a few teams.
Yeah, you touched on Kachunga there. He scored in his debut and he looking like a great loan signing. Where do you think Narky Wells is going to fit in when he does come back, or if he fits in at all?
Well, it's interesting because Narky Wells has missed the last couple of weeks due to a knee injury, which means that technically he's 2 weeks behind in terms of fitness.
And I've seen a few people who share the opinion that actually, based on what we've seen from Kachunga both in pre-season and on Saturday, that he's actually the better striker at the moment, which is remarkable given that obviously Wells was our top scorer last season and he was one of the lone bright spots in what was a pretty dismal season. So I don't honestly know where he fits in now. There's been talk that there's bids coming in from Norwich and Derby. I don't know what to believe of that. But let's say hypothetically that we manage to keep him. I can honestly see Wagner going with Kachunga up front for most games in a 4-2-3-1, which means that Wells will probably be playing off the bench, which is something that he might not be happy about, but it's up to him to then go and prove that, you know, he's the right man to lead the forward line, and the only way he can do that is by scoring goals.
Yeah, we'll move on to you now, James. Obviously, you had a great win to kick off the season, 3-0 over Leeds United. Just talk us through moving on over the summer and your first game.
Yeah, no, of course. Well, I mean, over the summer, I think we came back quite early, about 7 weeks ago, and then it was a lot of QPR's usual pre-season friendly teams, Northampton, Wickham, Aldershot. We always seem to play those sort of teams, and we weren't really pulling up any trees. We had a little tour to Holland. It was meant to be a game against PSV in front of loads of people. Then for some reason, they got played behind doors, which didn't go down well with a lot of people that went over. But in fairness, the CEO of QPR was there, and Lee Hughes. And I mean, I don't know if it was him personally or the board or whatever, but they paid for a lot of drinks or an open bar for a lot of the people that went, which is quite a nice touch. And then just before pre-season, you know, we had a nice 1-0 win, or was it 1-0 or 2-0 win, over Watford at Loftus Road, which was the only kind of home pre-season friendly that that QPR had. And I mean, Watford was slightly behind us in terms of prep, but I mean, that's not to take anything away from how QPR did. It was pretty good against Watford, and then that sort of led into today, and well, it's Sunday when we played, and we looked, I mean, it's worrying to be optimistic after one game, but I can't remember QPR looking that good under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank last season. We weren't dreadful, but I mean, we over the whole course of the year, I know he wasn't there the whole time, but we drew 18 times. So we were good at turning a win into a draw and a defeat into a draw, but we couldn't seem to shift on. But today, 4-2-3-1 also seems to be his favoured formation. Leeds weren't dreadful, but Alex Smithies, QPR keeper, didn't have to make a single save. If there's ever any highlights floating about, which I'm sure there are, you will see that he hasn't really have to make a save the whole match. It's oddly uncomfortable, like that easy a win. I mean, previous seasons, not too long ago, I think we lost 5-0 or 5-1 to Swansea. We lost 4-0 to Bolton opening day. And so, you know, and I mean, even the year, I remember the year we won the championship, Leeds did us both times. They were the only team to beat us that year. So to kind of win 3-0 and quite comfortably was just slightly unsettling. But it was encouraging. It was encouraging. I mean, I still think we're a bit short out wide. We have Ben Gladwin and Olamide Shadipo making his debut from the QPR youth team. And Shadipo did well. But I still think we're lacking slightly in wide areas, but it was really encouraging as an opening day. I'm uncomfortable with feeling positive about QPR at the moment, but that's how I am.
Yeah, well, you should be. I mean, 3-0 on the opening day is a great result. Just one thing I'd like to ask you is, since relegation there appears to be like a major change in strategy, namely in recruitment, do you agree with it, and do you think it's starting to, you know, work out?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, ultimately, we've got a really small stadium for the championship, and I'm not saying that a stadium dictates everything, but, you know, I remember when Hughes was in charge all those years ago, you know, 18,000-seater stadium, and we had two international goalkeepers. But those sort of days have certainly gone, and actually, you know, as we had previously had a Huddersfield, got another Huddersfield fan on the pod, you know, I don't know if you guys didn't rate Alex Smithies, but he's been fantastic. And he was, in terms of the new recruitment, one of the first early ones that came in, and you were just like, hang on, we've not paid this much. He's quite young. He's played at this level quite a bit it's quite positive, and I totally agree with it. You've got to cut your cloth accordingly. You know, I see QPR as kind of a big small club rather than the other way around. And it's refreshing, but it's exactly what we needed, and I think it's good. I mean, picking up Jordan Cousins for like 1.25 million, whatever it was, it's a great bit of business.
Louis, we'll just come on to you now. We're recording just after Sheffield Wednesday beat Aston Villa 1-0 at home after a late Forestieri winner. How are you feeling about the season, and like, how did you rate the game as a whole?
To be honest, I'm feeling positive, especially after today and today's result. I went into the game feeling confident. I expected us to win because our home form is very good. I know Aston Villa have recently come down, so you don't know what to expect from that kind of team going into a bit of an unknown league for them. But over the course of the summer, we've had a really, really good pre-season. So I think we've only lost, which was like a training game away in Portugal. So we've played like a non-league team, League One team. We played Benfica and we've managed to beat all them teams in pre-season. Forestieri, I mean, it was man of the match today against Aston Villa. He's been on absolute fire in pre-season, so he's continued that good run. So, yeah, definitely feeling positive today after the Aston Villa game. I thought particularly Forestieri, again, was lively as ever. We've just brought in Daniel Pudel on a permanent transfer. He was consistent, as was Kieran Lee. The only disappointment, or two disappointing things, what came out of today against Aston Villa for me was a Ross Wallace dive. Complete simulation is something I don't like to see, especially players wearing a Wednesday shirt. It's just something that I can't comprehend. So that was disappointing. The other disappointing thing for me was I was really looking forward to seeing Stephen Fletcher play up front today, and how he would link up with Forestieri. And obviously, he's gone off really badly injured with a head injury after about 20, 25 minutes. And up to that point, he was doing well. He was winning headers. He was getting in the box. And up to that point, he was doing well and he had to go off. But that was disappointing. Other than that, I thought we managed the game really well first 20 minutes, and after the Fletcher injury, that's when Aston Villa really came into the game.
This season, unlike last year, there's a lot of expectation on Sheffield Wednesday to challenge in the top six. Do you think this could have a negative effect as opposed to last year, where not a lot was expected and they surged up unexpectedly?
I did think that initially. I thought that myself. Like you say, we lost at Wembley. We were 90 minutes away from playing Premier League football. I really did think, like you say, could this have a negative effect on the team? However, luckily, we've got a chairman and a manager who do really know what they're doing, or seem to know what they're doing. I know it's only early days. We've won one out of one game. Great start, but only time will tell. However, the positive thing for me is over the summer, we've brought in the players where we needed strengthening, as opposed to just any old player what would look good on the pitch or on the bench. We've brought in such as Stephen Fletcher, who's an upgrade to Ati Nuiu. So we've improved in that department, who's going to win headers and flick-ons for such as Forestieri and Hooper. We've brought in another wide man only a couple of days ago. So we brought in Will Buckley, who I don't expect to fall straight into the first team, if not at all. I mean, he might be a kind of, he weren't in the first team squad today. He may initially start playing like on a cup game on Tuesday. We've got Cambridge. So he may play in that if he's fit. But then obviously we've brought in Daniel Pudil, who was consistent last season. He was a great signing at left back. So although you mentioned like negativity in the team, because obviously, like I said, they were 90 minutes away from Premier League football, I really think we've strengthened in the right areas. So we're only going to progress. And last season we finished sixth. This season, like I mentioned, hopefully we can push for that top four. If we were to buy another couple of players, I mean, we need another centre-back. We need a strong, sturdy centre-back who's going to challenge such as Tom Lees and Glenn Leuvens when he's fit at centre-back, because then we can play Hutchinson in a midfield role again if need be, especially away from home. If we get one more defender and potentially another left back or a left sided player, we have been linked with Adam Meach of Middlesbrough. I understand a bid's been rejected. If we can strengthen in them areas, there's no reason why we can't challenge for third or second position this season. I just don't see why not at all.
Yeah, we'll just I'll move on to Newcastle now. Obviously, the game was awful, but I'll move on to that in a bit. We started the week off with some positivity. We signed Mo Diame and Kieran Clark to get another couple of bodies in and to add a bit of depth to the squad, which was great. I think Diame is going to be a very, very good player. And I think when you saw the game on Friday, we were lacking somebody exactly like Diame, somebody who's going to run from midfield, sort of power through the opposition midfield and sort of and just carry that ball forward and create things. And we massively lacked that in our midfield on Friday. So I think he's going to be a great addition. I think he's probably going to come into the team on Saturday, and that's going to be very, very good for us. We're still looking at Anthony Knockhart, although I don't think that's a deal that's going to happen. According to Benitez, he said that Brighton don't really want to sell Knockhart, which is understandable considering we're going to be challenging for the same places next season, this season. So I can understand why that's not happening, but he's another player who we need in that squad. So hopefully we can look in for some sort of winger to come into the squad and to add competition down that right-hand side. There's loads of positivity going into the game. We had a phone-in with Benitez on BBC Newcastle on Thursday, I think it was, and he was talking about how good the preparations were and how he was taking the league seriously and how he'd done so much homework. And the way he was just talking to the fans just built that positivity going into that first game. And then on the morning of the game, Jamal Lascelles was named captain. Dwight Gayle got the number 9 shirt. And again, it just sort of created that optimism again. We all got behind the squad, and we thought going to Fulham finished 20th last year. They just lost Ross McCormack and Moussa Dembele earlier in the summer. So we thought that's a really good game to kick off the season and hopefully get those first 3 points. But obviously that did not happen. We did not play well in that game at all, I don't think. We played long ball, which was a problem. I don't understand why he did it. We had Dwight Gayle and Ayoze Perez up front, who between them are probably about the size of a normal human being. So I don't understand why he played long ball with those two up front. And then Fulham, they were so well organised. They attacked set pieces. Matt Smith was causing havoc all game. And then, you know, we all know what happened next. He scored from the set piece, which we've been conceding goals from set pieces all summer. So it's not surprising, and it should be an area that we're really targeting to strengthen. And I thought when Grant Hanley came in, I thought he'd add that physical presence to the back four and that sort of championship experience. But he didn't have a great debut. Jamal Lascelles didn't have a great first game as captain. There weren't many positives to take from the game. The only things that did fill me with a bit of optimism were that Mo Diame is going to be coming into that team. Alexander Mitrovic is still to come back, and he's going to add that physical presence up front. We're probably not going to play that badly again. I think Benitez is the man to sort out the problems. In the past, we've had Pardew and McLaren, and when things haven't gone well, you think, oh, it's not going to get better because they don't have a clue what they're doing. But Benitez is a world-class manager, and hopefully he's going to put it right. It's only one game. Look, everyone had a good laugh at Newcastle on Friday night, and understandably so. Benitez has gone from managing Real Madrid to being bottom of the championship within 12 months. That's hilarious. There's going to be a good few laughs at Newcastle every time they lose. And I can understand that. But I think as the season progresses, we're going to have more wins than losses, and it's all going to be fine. We're going to be in that top six. I'm not as optimistic as everybody else that we're going to walk away with the league. We're definitely going to be challenging at the top end of the table, but I think it's going to be very difficult. There's some very, very good teams in the league this year, and we've seen over the weekend there's a few other teams that are sort of developing. Like we spoke about earlier, Huddersfield are developing. Bristol City got a good win, and I think they've added some great players. Fulham look like they're going to be a lot better than last season, so it's just going to be a very competitive league. And you know, I'm excited for the season, but also apprehensive because I do not like having that favourites tag, and it already looks like it's a bit heavy for some of our players, which is a worry. But hopefully, we get a few wins in the next few games, and it sort of improves. We'll just move into the topics for today. One thing I noticed on Friday was that the refereeing was slightly different to what I'm used to in the Premier League in terms of what is penalised and what isn't. We'll just start with you, Ollie. Do you have any thoughts about the refereeing in the league? And do you think it differs that much from the Premier League, or just think I just had one game where I noticed it a lot more and it's going to go back to the same?
I think, honestly, so with the Championship, the one thing that I would say is the refereeing is a little bit more inconsistent in terms of the styles are different from game to game. Sometimes you'll get referees who are really, really picky and they want to be the centre of attention. They make debatable calls, like penalty decisions, and they're hasty with the cards, and that can sometimes ruin a game. But then sometimes you'll also get referees who just don't want to make a decision, and quite frankly, they look a bit scared. Just speaking, obviously, from a personal point of view, yesterday we had a referee called Jeff Eltringham, and I cannot remember us having him before. I normally make a note to see if we've had him before. But I think he was a pretty good example of what you can get from a typical Championship ref, and who likes to referee games the right way. He let advantages go, and he wasn't too keen to dish out cards, which can sometimes ruin the competitiveness of a game. And I think that overall he did a very good job as well. When tempers do occasionally threaten to boil over, he manages to control the situation pretty well. But I think, yeah, you were right. I think one thing you will find is that the refereeing from week to week is probably a little bit more inconsistent, perhaps because the rule book isn't as strict. I mean, technically that shouldn't be the case, but I think referees in the Championship like to referee their own way a little bit more, and I think that's something that you'll find. I don't know what everyone else thinks.
Yeah, I don't know if that... I agree, actually. I don't know if that's kind of... especially that last point, I don't know if you feel like they're given a bit more freedom to sort of run the game as they see it, but you do see a bit more variety in terms of the level of refereeing. That being said, I'd say if there was any huge difference between the Premier League and the Championship, I think you get away with a little bit more physically in the Championship than you do in the Premier League. Not so much kind of tackles from behind and stuff like that, but it feels like there's a few more sort of, the sort of thing that you might wince at, and then play tends to move on, or advantage tends to happen a little bit more than from what I've seen kind of in the Premier League. But there is that kind of, referees, obviously they're people, they have different personalities, so you can get a referee that loves a stop start, loves the sound of their own whistle. By and large, I would say it is slightly more inconsistent, but I think, from a purist point of view, you're more likely to see a game flow. I don't know if that's the right word, but I feel that games tend to stop less often than they do in the Premier League.
I agree with you both, to be honest, Ollie and James. I believe that the inconsistency of referees in this Championship is unbelievable, to be honest, at some times. I mean, obviously, Jake, you mentioned you saw Newcastle play and you thought it was slightly different. I think totally on the day it can depend ultimately on the referee, what kind of mood they're in, because I've seen referees give penalties for shirt pulling, not for shirt pulling. There's all sorts of things, especially last season as a Wednesday fan. Sometimes I think the referee give a decision and they're afraid to make a bigger call, so it's easier to make a different decision. So, for example, last season, you may remember where there was all this controversy over Fernando Forestieri diving, and it was, I think, yellow carded or sent off on one occasion at Hull, and he was booked for diving on about four occasions. And on three of those occasions, he hadn't dived on. He did on one of those. He definitely a booking, but on three occasions, he did get booked for diving. And I think the referee in those situations were just afraid to make the bigger call of sending off a defender when it were one on one. I think it was Dawson at Hull on this occasion, but in the Premier League, I think the step up of refereeing, making those bigger calls, giving penalties when it's a shirt pull in the box, simulation, different things like that. I completely agree with the inconsistency from you guys.
Yeah, I think they were all fair points. I think we saw on Friday, we didn't get a penalty decision, which we probably should have got. And I just think the overall quality of the refereeing is maybe on a step lower than the Premier League, which is completely understandable considering it is the tier below. another thing I noticed was on set pieces, there was a bit more sort of pulling and people weren't getting talked to as much as they do in the Premier League. And I'm sure as we progress game by game, I'm going to notice there's a slight differences between each referee, and it can completely depend on who you get and it's sort of what mood they're in. I did think going into the season that maybe Newcastle would get more decisions based on being the favourite and sort of having Rafa Benitez as manager. Maybe that is a bit optimistic from me, thinking that we were going to get the favourable calls, as that definitely wasn't the case on Friday, when we definitely should have had at least one penalty. I'm not completely convinced by the other penalty shouts, but there was definitely one in the first half where there was a handball off a cross from Matt Ritchie, and that probably should have been given. But yeah, I completely agree with those points.
I don't think you can expect to get favourable treatment just because you're a big club in the league. That's all I will say.
Yeah, I think that's maybe me being a bit optimistic. I'm just so used to Man United and things getting the big calls. It wasn't so much because we're Newcastle United, it's just because we had Rafa Benitez. I thought some referees might just pander to him a little bit, but obviously not. I don't want them to. I just want it to be a fair game, but I want just the right decisions to be given at the end of the day. And we were on the wrong end of that on Friday, but I'm sure at some other point in the season we're probably going to get a very debatable penalty call, or we're going to get away with one, and you know that's just the season, and it all evens itself up in the end. So we'll just move on to the next topic. The transfer window has only less than a month to run now, and they've stopped the emergency loan window, so Championship clubs can't bring in players outside of the transfer window. So we'll start with you, Ollie. Do you think Huddersfield need to strengthen, and if so, what positions?
I think, obviously, first of all, we've done a very, very good job over the summer of making good acquisitions early on that are really for the benefit of the team. We essentially have now an entirely new defence. We signed a German left-back in Chris Lowe, two centre-backs in Chris Schindler and Michael Heffler. Schindler's a club record signing. It was nearly £2 million. We also signed another defender from Dortmund, John Stankovic, who was forced to sit on the bench yesterday because we've still got Mark Hudson, who is doing a good job at Championship level. And yeah, we've brought in a load of midfielders. Obviously, Kachunga up front, Casey Palmer and Jack Payne, two attacking midfielders as well. Rajiv Van La Parra, who's a winger, has signed on a permanent basis. Danny Ward has signed, obviously, on loan from Liverpool. And then we've also got a guy called Coleman, who's a goalkeeper from Oldham, who was their first choice towards the back end of last season, I believe. So really, our squad should be pretty much set to go. But, you know, it's the transfer window and you can never tell what's round the corner. There's been some talk, like I mentioned earlier today, about Naki Wells being a subject of a bid from Derby or Norwich or possibly both. I think that Dean Hoyle is the kind of chairman, we've seen this in the past with Jordan Rhodes in particular, where if the money is right for a player, then he will sell because no player is irreplaceable at the end of the day. Wells has become a bit of a fan favourite. Obviously, he signed from Bradford, which was good for West Yorkshire bragging rights. But yeah, if the right money comes along and we have a replacement lined up, I would expect that to be the only bit of business that we do. Some rumours have been linking us with Lewis McGugan, but again, I think that would only be if there was an outgoing player, possibly Philip Billing, but I don't think that'll be in this window. So I suppose it was a long way of answering the question, saying no, we probably won't do any more business between now and the end of the window.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, James, do you think that's the same for QPR? Do you think that there's going to be more business? And if so, what sort of areas are you looking to strengthen?
I think they might they might do a little bit more business. They've bought loads of people defensively, which is really encouraging. You know, very briefly, we got Jake Bidwell, Brentford captain for the past couple of seasons at left back. Actually, just refreshing having a genuine left back, play left back, which is really good. We got Lynch from Huddersfield. I don't know how you feel about that. And I mean, the thing is, it depends if Stephen Caulker will go or not, whether we can play buy more, and also whether Lynch will play a bit, because Anua seems to be put down at right back. And I think with financial fair play, I mean, that's a minefield I don't fully understand, to be honest, but I think QPR are a lot more wary these days and making sure they've got to comply to it. But I think we spent between five and six, maybe a bit more now, because we just signed a right winger, Bakoto, from Metz. But QPR have spent 5 to 7 million and bought five or six players, which is, you know, hilarious considering how they used to be. But the fact that J. Emmanuel Thomas went out on loan, that leaves Sebastian Poulter and Connor Washington, who still hasn't scored for QPR. Despite 15 starts, including substitutions and stuff like that. I mean, he's not really been given a big run. I feel like there might be one more person further up, but maybe it'll be a loan. I don't know. But I think maybe one more attacking option might happen. But other than that, I think they're looking all right.
Do you think there's going to be any outgoings at QPR, or do you think it's only going to be incomings, if any?
It's a nice position that we're getting rid of these absolutely toxic assets that we've had. I mean, I Lord knows how Armand Traore. I mean, he went on a free. Armand Traore didn't play for 18 months. This man used to get cramp every 70 minutes. How he managed to secure a 3-year deal at Forest is beyond me. I got some grief for being pretty clear about that on Twitter. But he's gone. And then in terms of what's left, I mean, Stephen Caulker maybe, but it depends. He sounds like he wants to stay, but you never know. And then obviously there's the lesser seen Brazilian footballer Sandro, who, I mean, you know, he couldn't finish a sentence, let alone a football match. I mean, so he's still floating about, and I'm not sure if there's really anybody else of kind of value. Hoylett didn't say yes to his contract, and so he's without club. And we got rid of Leroy Fer, another player that I thought was utterly useless. Three seasons in English football, two relegations. So other than Sandro, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody else floating about, but he's the big one that we really need to shift on, I think.
Yeah, Stephen Caulker's an interesting one, because we were linked with him earlier in the window, and I think he was a player that a lot of Newcastle fans wanted to buy, but we ended up going for Grant Hanley, who is a completely different footballer. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he stays. And if he does stay, I think that would be a great move for the club, because I think he's very good for this division. So hopefully he does stay at QPR and sort of helps you challenge for those playoff spots. So we'll just move on to you now, Louis. Do you think there's going to be any more business at Sheffield Wednesday? You mentioned earlier about a centre-half possibly. Do you think that's something that could happen? And if so, what sort of player would you want to target?
Yeah, it will happen. They will get two more players minimum, I believe, to strengthen. We definitely need somebody at centre-half as cover, potentially a left-back, as I mentioned. I mean, over the summer, we did strengthen with Alman Abdi. We got him from Watford, spent £4 million. We brought in another goalkeeper, so we've got Jake Keane also, we got from Norwich. So we have actually got like three or four goalkeepers on the books now. So obviously games come thick and fast in this league and with the Cup. So we have got strength and depth in goal. But regarding players coming in, we like I mentioned, we were linked with Adam Reach from Middlesbrough, who plays predominantly as left back or left winger. We were mentioned to be linked with a player who I'm a bit unsure about. He's called Gurain Endor. He plays as a centre-back or defensive midfielder. And I think he's at Lens in France. He used to be on loan at Birmingham City. He's 32 years of age. I don't know a lot about him. He's Senegalese. He's a player, because I don't know a lot about him, I'd rather us be linked with somebody else. I was going to mention, obviously, Stephen Caulker. I was going to bring that up with you, James, also, because I was just wondering the situation with him, really. I know, obviously, he went to Liverpool on loan, stepped up a league. He's come back to you guys, so I'll ask you that at the end. But outgoings, like you mentioned, Ollie, you're linked with Lewis McGugan. McGugan is somebody that our manager, Carvajal, does want to offload. which is strange because obviously last season when we bought McGugan, he was potentially our best technically minded and flair player who could get assists and score goals. But he just, for some reason or whatever reason, he just does not fit in our squad. I don't know if it's lack of motivation, that he doesn't track back, but he is a gifted player. So any team who are willing to take on Lewis McGugan are going to get a very, very good player. I just don't know whether it's his attitude what lets him down. Obviously, I don't know what goes off the field, behind the scenes, but whoever will get Lewis McGugan is going to get a player who's going to score you 8 to 10 goals probably this season. He is a talent. But yeah, if I can ask you, James, regarding Colker, what is his situation?
I think the thing with Colker is he's had a few problems off field. I mean, I can't really speculate because I don't know what they are, but for some reason, a couple of years ago, QPR and Crystal Palace had joint Christmas parties and he managed to get involved in a fracas there. And then it was another time that he got done for shoplifting and then he wasn't done for shoplifting. I think his off-the-field antics, for lack of a better word, have kind of affected him. And then there's not been that much stability at QPR, really, that whenever he's come back, you know, I think now there's a bit of a kind of stability. You know, we've got a manager who's had a full pre-season, had a bit the season before, and seems to like him. And he's come back and he's, not that he ever looked out of shape, but he looks leaner, he looks trimmer. And he did an article in The Guardian not a couple of days ago about a visit to Sierra Leone, which I think his granddad is from Sierra Leone. And it apparently it sort of opened his mind, kind of gave him a new perspective on life. And I've always thought it was in the head, because as a footballer, he's got everything going for him. But I think from 19 to 20 to about how old he is now, 24, 25, he's not really progressed. And that's why he's moved around that much. I think if he actually kind of focuses solely on his football and gets that right, then he should be one of the best centre-halves in the league, easily.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I went to Anfield last season and strangely enough, I saw him playing a 3-3 draw against Arsenal and he was brought on as a substitute, you may remember, in the 80th minute, and he actually played a few games up front.
The big man, the big target man.
Yeah, he did, yeah. And that was strange for me to watch. But obviously, since that point, he was obviously playing in the Premier League with Liverpool. He's come back to you guys. And I really does hope he does kick on and he stays with you guys and he ends up doing really well and you're finishing a playoff spot minimum if you can do. But it's, with him being an Englishman as well, he's such a young age, he is a talent. And I just hope he does, like I say, kick on and he progresses with you guys.
Thanks, me too, because there isn't a huge flaw with his game. He's quick. He looks fairly intelligent. He can pass the ball. You kind of think you've got everything going for you game-wise. He can be a ball-playing centre-half if he wants to be. I think that's it. And maybe, you know, with some players, it just takes the penny to drop a bit longer or them to, you know, you never know kind of. I think in that article, in the Guardian article, he spoke about how these kids in Sierra Leone run to school, and he said he used to run away from school. And maybe, just maybe, the crowd he has outside, who knows? But I certainly hope he stays, and I hope he does well. Or if he doesn't stay, that at least we get some decent money for him. But I'm hoping he stays, but you never know with QPR. They love selling a player.
They are some really interesting points about Stephen Colker, because I remember when he was a young player at Spurs, he did get an England call up and he did, you know, he was tipped for big things and sort of seen as one of the future England centre halves, and he was going to get sort of 80, 90 caps, and there was a lot of big hype about him, and he's sort of gone off the rails. And I'd say he hasn't not only not progressed, he's regressed as well as a footballer. So hopefully this season is the one for him to get back to doing what he does best, and he can hopefully, you know, go some way to fulfilling that potential. But moving on to Newcastle and their transfer business, although we spent God knows how much money, I think at one point we spent more money than the other 23 clubs combined. I don't think that's true anymore because of the McCormack deal. But, you know, I think we're going to bring in a couple more players at least. Peter Crouch and Daryl Murphy have both been linked incredibly to Newcastle over the summer. I think that's the type of forward we are going to buy, because on Friday we looked lost. without Mitrovic and Gale, as good as he is at scoring goals, I don't think he's a player who's going to hold up the ball and sort of get those midfield runners into play. So I think that's definitely an area we need to strengthen. And I wouldn't mind if it's not a big name. I see some Newcastle fans want Abel Hernandez from Hull. I don't think I want him purely because we've got Mitrovic and I have full faith in him getting back to what he does best. And sort of, and I think in the Championship, he's going to do very well in this league. So I wouldn't get somebody, a big name player, but a Peter Crouch would be perfect. I think he'd come in, sort of cover those games, play sort of start maybe like 10 to 15 games and come on in a lot more. And he'd add experience. And I think he'd get goals in the Championship. So I think he's a player we should look for. I think we're also going to look for a winger and a left back. We're linked with Browning from Everton today on loan. I think he'd be a good signing purely because we got Paul Dummett, who just leaves our side unbalanced. He can't get forward. He's rash at the back. And I think he's in the long term going to be a centre back. So hopefully we get a new left back in just to provide balance. And I think Rafa loves to have a balanced side. So I think that's definitely a position we're going to look to strengthen. But I just want to move on to player watch quickly. Obviously, we all had games this weekend. All three of you won and sadly I lost. But I just want to ask you, which players sort of stood out? And if there's anyone, did anyone disappoint?
From our point of view, it was mostly positives. Like I said, it couldn't really get much worse after losing 5-1 to Brentford last game of last season. So it was refreshing to see the pressing game that Wagner's worked on while he's been here. And it was also pretty pleasing to see the new signings managing to gel and play that system well. We played the 4-2-3-1, like I mentioned, and that seemed to work well. There were some doubts about whether Kachunga, due to his size, could play as a lone striker. And I think that he actually did it exceptionally well. He used his build and he wasn't afraid to drift out wide because he knew he had support runners going into the box. So, you know, he was a big plus. But the biggest positive for me, and I know there are a lot of Town fans who feel the same way, is Aaron Moy, who is a midfielder who we have on loan from Man City. He was signed this window, actually, from Melbourne. And he just looked a class above in pre-season. We were wondering if he was going to carry that over into league football, and he certainly did. He just looked so composed on the ball. He sees the pockets of space. He can pick 50-yard passes. And, yeah, I think that it's a shame in a way because we know he's only a season-long loan and we've got absolutely no chance of signing him on a permanent basis. But, yeah, he was definitely the standout performer. I suppose I also better mention quickly Schindler, our club record centre-back, who played alongside Mark Hudson. So, you know, first Championship appearance again, partnered alongside a guy who's played hundreds of games in the Championship, and honestly, you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference. Schindler slotted in there really well, made a lot of vital blocks, and showed good aerial ability. So, you know, from front through to back, we had a lot of bright spots on Saturday, which was nice to see.
Did anyone disappoint, or did the whole team play well? And it'd be unfair to pick somebody out.
Yeah, I think it would be unfair to pick anyone out as being disappointing. That I think the main thing with Town, and it's been this way probably since I've started supporting them, is that, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens as long as the fans can see that you're putting in 100%. I imagine it's the same for fans of every club, but, you know, everyone went out there and put 100% in, and I know it's such a cliche, but that was the most pleasing thing. In terms of, you know, anything, individual errors or anything like that you could penalise, I can honestly say that everyone was pretty faultless. I guess right back Tommy Smith, who's one of the few remaining members of the squad who got into the starting lineup from last season, switched off a little bit for their equaliser, but really it came from nothing. So I'd be been very harsh if I picked anyone out and said they had a shocker, you know.
Yeah, I think that's fair. James, would you agree for QPR? Was it only successful performances, or did anyone disappoint?
I think I'm hard to please. So there's all, you know, what's good, positively speaking, there are lots of people that, you know, I was thinking about before the pod, who would I single out? And it was hard because there were lots of people that played brilliantly. Massimo Luongo, who we got from Swindon the year before, last summer, he was fantastic alongside Carl Henry, who has his detractors amongst the QPR fans. He got booed at points last season. What is the point in booing your own player? But I thought those two were great. Sebastian Polter, our big German workhorse up front, brilliant and scored a really deserved goal in injury time. And then at the back, everybody was pretty solid. Disappointing wise, it's more. I just don't know if he's just not up to this at this level. It's Ben Gladwin. He came along from Swindon Town with Massimo Luongo, sort of a double deal. And I don't know if they just decided to bring his mate along. I know that like he was like an usher or like the best man at Massimo Luongo's wedding or something. But Gladwin, you know, I'd never want people to do badly, but he was just occupied. He got a yellow card in the first half relatively early, then just looked like he was afraid to put a foot in. I just feel like the Championship's a bit above him at the moment. I want to be proved wrong because every now and then he has a bit of skill that you're like, oh, hang on. But he looked like he was going to get sent off at the beginning of the second half, and he got subbed, and Jordan Cousins, who can play right side of midfield, but I wouldn't say that's his best position, came on and did a much more sound job. So that's kind of the I wouldn't say negative, but he was slightly disappointing. That's hopefully that new guy, Bokoto, that we signed will probably get in ahead of him. But yeah, I mean, on the flip side, the positives, many good ones. I mean, Jake Bidwell made his debut at left back, and he looks terrifying in a good way. It was positive overall for many of the players.
Moving on to Sheffield Wednesday, obviously the match is still fresh in the mind, Louis. Who impressed and did anyone disappoint at all?
The obvious one to say is Fernando Forestieri, but you guys and most people know what Forestieri is all about. He's going to score goals this season, probably minimum 15, and he's going to get assists, and he's probably going to get sent off as well for diving. But because he's just that type of player, he gets up, he gets back on his feet. But the standout after not conceding a goal today, I'm going to have to go with Tom Lees. Tom Lees has been linked with clubs such as Everton, Burnley. I think Burnley offered $5 or $6 million over the summer for Tom Lees. And undoubtedly, he's one of our best or first names on the team sheet at centre-back now. And he's one of the reasons why we are winning games, because we aren't conceding goals. And when he's paired with Glenn Leuvens or Hutchinson, he really is a powerhouse, strong centre-back who is going to win everything in the air. And one thing I noticed today is one of them game-changing moments where Ross McCormick was through on goal, and he probably should have scored, but due to Tom Lee's tracking back and getting that extra couple of yards on him, he managed to get a challenge in. And I thought that was that game-changing moment where we would have lost 1-0 on another day, but because of Tom Lee's and his performance again that he had today, he sometimes doesn't get all the plaudits that he should do. Every Wednesday fan knows he's a great centre-back, but you always tend to look at the goal scorers and the assist makers, such as Wallace or, like I mentioned, Forestieri and Hooper. But Tom Lees, for me, he stuck out today. Another clean sheet. And going forward, he's only going to get stronger. He's only about 25 years of age. And God knows how we get him on a free transfer from Leeds United. Disappointing that it's a tough one to call today, because no one particularly disappointed. One thing to mention is, and I don't like saying this, but Ati Nuihu wasn't disappointing when he came on today, but you can tell he's getting to the point where he's kind of reached his prime in the Championship. Now we're becoming a top six team in the Championship. He probably needs to be at a lower bottom team in the league, if that makes more sense. He's and that's one reason why we brought in Stephen Fletcher, because he's an upgrade to Nuihu, and I expect Nuihu to be playing from the bench again this season and in cup competition. So by all means, no, he hasn't disappointed, but I thought he was just slightly out of his depth today. He puts in a lot of work rate and hard work and tackles, but actually then game-changing moments and key moments, he just slightly lacks. And he's a player what's probably only, if he played every game this season, he'd only score 5 or 6 goals, and that's just the only part of his game and disappointing thing for me. But other than that, no, everyone, the first 11 today all played really well. Obviously, that won't be week in, week out. We do play Norwich on Saturday, which is a big test. But no, I can't ask for more today with 3 points.
I'm currently on the flip side of this coin where it's very difficult to pick out a player that impressed me and very easy to criticise every player on that pitch. But I'll start with a couple of players that did impress me. I think Isaac Hayden, who came in from Arsenal after his loan spell at Hull last season, he looked good. He looked like he could win the ball in the middle of the park and sort of move it simply to a more talented player, which is sort of his role. He's just there to break up the play. And he just looked like he just settled into the team seamlessly, and he just looks like he's going to be a very, very good player for Newcastle in the years ahead. And I think that he's coming in to replace Cheick Tiote, who hasn't left yet, but he's a player I expect to leave. So it's a big shoes to fill, but you know, I think he's a very, very good player. And from what I've read, he's expected to go on and do good things in the game. And I think Arsene Wenger liked him a lot at Arsenal, and he just couldn't give him minutes on the pitch. So I'm glad we've got him, and I think he's a player that's going to do well for us. As well as Matt Ritchie, he impressed me. I think he looked good on the ball. He looks like he's going to be a difficult player to dispossess when he's on it. He doesn't have loads of pace and skill, so he's not going to be one of those wingers that runs and runs at defences. But I think he's going to be very good, and he's going to score goals. He perhaps should have scored on Friday when he put the shot straight at the keeper. But again, he just looks like he's a level above the Championship. So hopefully he's going to do very well for us this season. In terms of disappointment, I'm just going to go massively in on Jack Colback because he was awful and I don't really see what he brings to the team. He was good for us the year after he joined for Sunderland. He sort of had a role and he played well, but since then he's been awful. He sort of plays best when he's playing in a team that are against it and sort of trying to sustain pressure and then play on the break. And this year at Newcastle, more likely than not, we're going to be dominating matches and having most of the ball. So I think he's probably a player that is going to be dropped eventually. He just didn't do anything on Friday. He was the player that was meant to get the ball and sort of make things happen, but he did absolutely nothing. And he just looked very, very bad. He looked like he belonged in League One. He looked like the Championship was above him, which is incredible considering he's been playing in the Premier League for all of his career. So yeah, he's a player that massively disappointed, and hopefully either John Joe Shelby or Mohamed Diame come in on Friday, Saturday, purely because they're going to do more on the ball than Colback could ever wish to do. So yeah, I hope Colback gets dropped, and hopefully when he does, it will improve performances on the pitch. But we're just finally going to move on to match previews, where we're just going to discuss our matches next week and maybe give a prediction for that. We'll start with you, James. QPR are going to Cardiff. How do you see that going?
I was just going to say, Jake, briefly, do you think Jack Colback thinks he's above the Championship and that's the problem?
I don't think so. I mean, he's played his whole career in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think he knows his level. He's sort of very low Premier League, probably top Championship on his day. I just think it's a lack of confidence more than anything. He's been involved in this Newcastle team when it's just kept going down and down and down. And I just think maybe he's lost his confidence, which is understandable when you've been relegated. But hopefully he does pick things up, because he does support. He's a Newcastle supporter. He's a very good player on his day. I just think at the moment he needs. So that's why I sort of picked him out quite a lot. But yeah, he hasn't been great for the last year or two. So it's probably a good thing that he's on his way out of the team. And from what I've read, I think Rafa is going to drop him. But yeah, I just think he's just having a bad time. But I don't think he's the type of player that would think he's too good for the Championship. I think there's others in the squad that would think like that. Maybe Jose Perez, but I don't think Colback is that type of player. But yeah, if you just want to talk about your game at the weekend and sort of give a prediction.
Yeah, sure. So we got Cardiff, another Sunday away. Last season we drew 2-2 at Loftus Road. We were 2-0 up and then they got back into it. And then I think it was Scott Malone scored a very good goal from kind of the left-hand side from where I'm sat, the left-hand side of the box. Annoyingly good equaliser in the late. And then we dented their playoff chances by drawing 0-0 at Cardiff City Stadium. So, I mean, they've still got Peter Whittingham appears to still be sort of their main creative force. And then I've heard that Fabio might be on the way out. It's way back when this used to be a bit of a needle game because God, was it 2002, 2003? QPR lost to Cardiff in the then league, whatever it was called, League Two or Division Two playoff final. And it was when Wembley was being rebuilt. So I went, and we went to the Millennium Stadium and we watched QPR lose in extra time to Cardiff. And I think there's all, and the hotel that QPR players stayed in, the fire alarms went off at 4 o'clock in the morning. The evening before, so there's quite a lot of ill sentiment, I think, between the fans. But it'd be nice to see QPR maybe, if you want to try and do well, you've got to at least draw away. And I think Cardiff did. They drew with Birmingham, and they finished eighth, so they're going to be there and thereabouts. But I don't think they strengthened too much. So I'm kind of just hedging my bets and probably saying that I'd love to see us get a draw, but secretly I think that we might be able to win, set up in a 4-2-3 as well, with Poulter, who's a very, very hard working forward, and Hasselbank loves to run his players into the ground. I can see if you're going to beat us, it's going to be hard. I think I'm not saying that won't happen. I'm sure QPR will get walloped plenty of times this season, but if you want to beat us, I think you're going to have to be up for it. So hopefully we can get at least a point. But Cardiff always seem to have a little bit of a sign over QPR. So we shall see.
Yeah. Also on at the weekend, it's going to be Norwich City against Sheffield Wednesday. Obviously, Norwich had a fabulous opening day victory against Blackburn, and they looked very, very good. And living up to their preseason billing. How do you view that one going, Louis? Do you think Sheffield Wednesday can go to Norwich and get something, or do you think that it's going to be just a step too far?
It is going to be very tough. For me, Norwich are going to be the team that are definitely going to be up there, top two. In fact, if I were putting money on it, Norwich would finish first for me, I'm afraid to say that to you, Jake, with you being a Newcastle fan. But for me, yeah, Norwich are definitely going to finish in that top two. And again, if I were putting money on it, they'd go up and they'd probably come back down again. That type of team at this stage, I think they've kind of reached their peak where they will go up and potentially just keep coming down and going up for a few years like they have been doing. Regarding the game, this is, for me, the hardest game of the season. So I'm quite pleased that it's so early in the season, because we're going to go there with nothing to lose. We've just beat Aston Villa. Like you mentioned, they had a fantastic result yesterday, 4-1 against Blackburn away. So obviously they sit top of the league after one game. They've got some cracking players as well, like Wes Houlihan at this level, Stephen Naismith, they've got Ruddy in there, Cameron Jerome, a typical players what are going to get you out of this league and get you promoted. So, looking at the game, I would take anything or get any point from the game. If we can come away and we have drawn 0-0 or 1-1, I will take that any day of the week. If we came away with a victory, then I'll definitely be going to the pub that evening. But it is on TV, so I'm going to be watching it. But like I mentioned, I think it is going to be very tough. But if I was predicting a result, I'm going to be optimistic and go 1-1. I believe.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair point about Norwich. They've got very, very good players, and on the opening day they looked great. I think they're going to set the pace early, but I'm not quite sure they're going to win the league. But we'll just move on to Newcastle against Huddersfield now. I'll let you go first, Ollie. What are your thoughts going into this one? Obviously, Huddersfield can't really lose. I mean, if they win, they're just going to add more pain to Newcastle, and if they lose, it's not going to set them back too much, because it's a game they probably expected to lose going into the season anyway. What are your thoughts on the game, and are you quite confident after what happened on the opening weekend?
Yeah, I think you said it right there. I think that winning against Brentford was absolutely massive, because it allowed us to go into the game against Newcastle away, and then on Tuesday night against Villa away, with a little bit of freedom, not necessarily the pressure to get results early in the season, which we've been accustomed to. And obviously it allows us in a way as well to go into these games without any kind of expectation, if you will, because like you said, when the fixtures came out, I don't think any of us were expecting to get anything from Newcastle, and it came up second game of the season, and we just thought, yeah, it's a tough start to the season.
So the win against Brentford was important. But I think that, you know, a lot of Town fans are not optimistic, but slightly hopeful that we can cause a little bit of an upset based on how we played on Saturday. I think that perhaps our strength under Wagner isn't necessarily going to be when we have to force the game. I think our strength is going to be how quick we can counter-attack and how well we can absorb the pressure and then go and batter teams up the other end. And based on what I saw from Newcastle, obviously, now I've said this, they're going to come out and absolutely wipe the floor with us. But based on what I saw from Newcastle, perhaps if we can exploit a couple of the vulnerabilities, I mean, even simple things like taking an early lead, you know, and then get the 49,000 home fans on the backs of the Newcastle players, that would be a kind of situation that plays into our hands. But if you were to ask me for a prediction, what do I think will happen in the game? I think that Newcastle will respond, to be honest. I can perhaps see Shelvey starting. I don't know what you think about that, but I think that our weakness might be those passes that, you know, pick us apart and when we've got our backs to goal as well. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, I've got a feeling that Newcastle might nick this one, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that Shelvey is probably going to start if I'm thinking about it. I think a lot of people are saying how Rafa hasn't managed in the Championship before and the players might think they can walk it. But I think on Friday it was the opposite. I think Rafa played a bit too much respect to Fulham. He played with three sort of centre defensive midfielders in Anita, Hayden and Colback. And he sort of played Anita on the wing. And I think he played very defensively and he sort of tried to keep it tight at the back, and when we had the ball and we had most of the possession, we didn't have the players in the team to unlock that defence. I think that's probably what's going to change on Saturday. I think Shelby's going to come in. I think Diame is almost certain to start, and I think that at home there's such a good feeling around the club at the moment. The fans love Rafa. We've sold more season tickets than we have in any other season, more than last season and the couple before that. So I think it's just going to be a great atmosphere despite what happened on the first day, and I think we're probably going to come out on top. I do fear Huddersfield purely because Fulham threatened us quite often on the break. And if we I think it's very important we get an early lead. I think the longer it stays at 0-0 or if we lose a goal, it could become problematic and it could be like Fulham all over again. But I think we're going to set up better. I think Rafa would have learned a lot from the first game. And I think we're probably going to come out. I don't think it's going to be a huge win, but I think it might be a 2-1, 1-0 sort of thing where we just get those 3 points on the board and just start our season off. But with that, we're now out of time. So if you have any projects you want to plug or if you just want to tell people where they can reach you, now would be a good time.
I'm Louis. So Twitter handle is at Louis Shackshaft. You can catch me anytime if you just want to drop me a tweet.
I'm it's Jim E. Evans on Twitter. Feel free to send any abuse. In terms of other projects, mostly trying to win Division One on FIFA Ultimate Team, which is going really badly.
Yeah, I'm at Ollie Fisher on Twitter. And if you, by any chance, any of the listeners like a bit of Italian football, then please follow at Sempre Milancom on Twitter. We're a fairly new site covering AC Milan news in English, and just go and check it out and see what you think.
Yeah, and my Twitter is at Jake Dapper with two N's. I write regularly for EPL Index on the Premier League. I started writing 3 or 4 times a day for the bootroom.com, which is doing some really good stuff, and I think ahead of the season that's definitely a website to check out. I also cover Dutch football for Total Dutch Football, and I write about Newcastle for NUFC 360. So basically I do just write all the time. So just check out my Twitter for anything more. And finally, thanks so much for you to tuning in this week. And we hope you join us again next week for more Championship discussion.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.